I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, what is your relationship with ventriloquism? How do you view ventriloquists and their dummies, their act, the art form of ventriloquism as kind of a subset of the puppetry storytelling medium?
Well, I love puppetry, as you know. Mm-hmm. So I have a soft spot in my heart for ventriloquists and the dummies and the puppets. I think it is a wonderful art form. However, I do recognize that a lot of people think it's creepy, for good reason, because you have this inanimate object that you're bringing to life.
Yeah, but then of course that's kind of all of puppetry. And granted, you have individuals who claim to be creeped out by all puppets, which I find tends to be more of a like a frailty of the imagination, because you're cutting out an entire storytelling medium that is you know, it's almost as old as humanity. We've been telling stories for so long, and a lot of the time we've been using inanimate objects to tell them.
It's true. And actually, this is really interesting. In ancient times, ventriloquists were actually thought to be able to speak to the dead and predict the future. And then the voices seemed to come from their stomachs. And that was thought to be the voice of the dead.
Oh, and this continues today with the work of Jeff Dunham.
That's right. That's right. By the 19th century, ventriloquism became a form of entertainment, and then people started to use dummies. But before that, they were just throwing their voices. And in fact, in some parts of the world, such among the tribes of the Zulu, Inuit, and Maori, ventriloquism is still used for religious and ritual purposes.
Very cool. There
you go. Just in case you thought that ventriloquism was just a throwback to, you know, this early 20th century art form,
yeah,
the creepy wooden doll head. No, it's been around for a long time.
Now, the creepy wooden doll head and the vaudevillian act of ventriloquism is probably what still resonates with most people. And probably not so much the actual acts. I think most people, when people think of ventriloquism, they're not even necessarily remembering any kind of actual ventriloquist act that they've seen. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some good ones. Here and there. I don't actively seek it out, but occasionally in
not
the course,
many do.
Yeah, but occasionally in the course of just going about your daily life, you're going to run into a ventriloquist act. And some artists make a go at being lively with it and creative and doing something interesting. But over the years, of course, they've also factored into a number of horror films and creepy interpretations. A few that come to mind, there was a 1964 film called Devil Doll, which is probably most known today as having been used in an episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000. But it is, even with the silhouetted figures at the bottom with Mike and the bots riffing on it and making fun of it, it's like a legitimately creepy film. It's one of these where it's like, where there's magic and there's this tug of war between Ventriloquist dummy and puppet master about who's in charge of who. And it's one of those films where the film quality is so poor, the acting is so weird, that it almost feels like some sort of a documentary. You almost get this feeling like you're peeking through a keyhole at something that's actually happened. And I find it to be a really unsettling film, despite it being kind of boring and despite always having seen it with people making fun of it.
You know why I think that is?
Why is that?
Because I think that even though there's all sorts of misdirection and illusion used in ventriloquism, there is a truth to it, meaning that there's a relationship between this puppet and the master, which means to say that that is a splintering of the ventriloquist's personality.
Yes.
It's just another version of them.
Yeah, so a lot of these horror tales basically come down to this idea that there is some deeper connection between puppet and puppet master. You see that in the Dummy episode from The Twilight Zone. You see it in Magic, 1978, which starred Anthony Hopkins as the ventriloquist. You see it in the Batman villain, the ventriloquist, where it's a ventriloquist dummy that's like a little mobster kind of character. Then there was an episode of Tales from the Crypt that I strongly remember as well, called The Ventriloquist's Dummy, in which this character is played by Bobcat Goldthwait, who is this up-and-coming ventriloquist who wants to get some tips from this older master played by Don Rickles. And the big reveal here is that Don Rickles' character, it's not really a ventriloquist dummy. It's like a parasitic twin that's monstrous little creature on the end of his hand.
What
just wears a mask.
What is the name of this film?
This is The Ventriloquist Dummy, and it was an episode of Tales from the Crypt.
That has everything I love in it, and I think I have mentioned before, shamefully, that I really, really do like Don Rickles, his humor.
Oh, well, he's
an insult comic, really.
Yeah, yeah, and he's acting in this. He's actually really good in this, and Bobcat's fun as well. It's one of those episodes of Tales from the Crypt that is at once like Tales from the Crypt at its best and worst, depending on exactly what you're expecting from that show. So, anyway, and then, of course, today we have Jeff Dunham, which I find kind of frightening and horrifying as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's incredibly popular. And the thing is that he's not incredibly popular because ventriloquism is incredibly popular. He just uses it as a medium and has been successful at it. But I really wanted to bring up Nina Conti.
Yes.
She is a ventriloquist. She has a documentary called Her Master's Voice. It is wonderful. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we sort of unroll this podcast and the science behind ventriloquism. But what I like about her act is that she can do the sort of straight up insult comic jokes vis-a-vis her puppet Monk the monkey.
Yeah, because that's it, like low level ventriloquism humor. The idea, it's not me that's awful, it's this little guy.
It's, oh, I can't believe what he just said. Ugh. And that's the other thing, they can really get away with saying a lot of things that they normally wouldn't be able to, and there's a sort of power in that, right? But she also has a very cerebral part of her act in which she's sort of making a comment on the human condition. And in one of her bits, she pretends as though Monk has taken over her body and has possessed her.
And Monk is very cute, just to see just looking at a still image of him.
But menacing.
Yes.
And see, that's the interesting thing, is she really does struggle with her relationship with this puppet and whether or not she should continue with it. So it's interesting. It's like something that she gets a lot of pleasure out of, but also at the same time she feels completely manacled to this as a profession. So in that context, you see her being possessed by Monk, and there's some very dark undertones there that are expressed, and that we all sort of feel, you know, we're tethered to something in our lives that we feel like, oh, I can't escape it.
Well, you know, and it also brings to mind some of the issues we talked about in the episode we did about the shadow self, and about, and we did the episode or two about pro wrestling, where we talked in both of them about what happens when we take on other personas in one way or another, be it as part of an act, if you're an actor, you know, a wrestling persona, or you're going undercover as a vice agent. All these different roles we take on, what does that do to us? What happens to us when we sort of pour a portion of our soul or our mind into this artificial creation. And it sounds like this film explores some of that territory as well.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And it's funny that you brought that up, because I thought the same thing when I was watching it. I thought this is a lot about, you know, what sort of personality you put out there. Mm-hmm. And then this monk character is really fulfilling an aspect of her personality, because she says in the film, I feel kind of bland as a person, but monk makes me feel as though I can express things that are hidden within me.
It falls in nicely with the, because on one hand we have the more or less perceived reality of ventriloquism, where it's somebody in a puppet saying a bunch of awful stuff through it. And then we have this fictional interpretation of it, where it's like, oh, what if there's something more significant that's taking place between puppet and puppet master? And then the closer you look, you realize that, yes, there is something more significant taking place in many cases.
Yeah, another aspect of this film that gives it another level of oddness is that, and I won't give it all away, but basically she has been bequeathed 6 puppets from her ex-lover. Mm-hmm. And these are bereaved puppets, and she has to do something with them. And one of them is based on her ex-lover. It's the face, and she can't quite make his voice work. And so it's weird, because she's trying, it's sort of like resurrecting him and her relationship with him through this puppet.
Because in a way, these puppets were him. They were all pieces of him that that he brought to life with his own energy. And now he is gone, but these puppets remain. And to a certain extent, she can reanimate them and make them live again.
But she also sort of is burdened by these puppets, mm-hmm. and one of them is a grandmother puppet. And I won't go into it, but there's a very creepy pool scene. She takes the grandmother swimming. It's very nice, right, you think? Mm-hmm. It does sort of uncover these weird feelings that she has about maybe that she's been burdened with this. But anyway, very interesting film. Let's get into the technical aspects here of how ventriloquists fool our brains.
Okay. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product, and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astaproallergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop.
Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, this is really interesting because it really comes into the way that we interpret what we're seeing, the way the sense data enters our brain and is turned into conscious thought. And this applies when you're thinking this. Think of the ventriloquist and the dummy, but also think of your television set,
yes,
and its speaker system. Think of any kind of puppetry or just the ability. Like I have a dinosaur, this stuffed dinosaur on my desk. I can pick it up and I can kind of talk and go like, oh, get on with this podcast. It's going kind of long. And you kind of buy into the fact that he's talking, even though I'm the one talking.
See, no, you know, just stop real quick. You just said something that maybe you wouldn't normally say, right?
Right.
This is going a little, we're kind of going off the tracks here. Again, the power of the puppet.
Yeah, maybe that's why he's here. He's here to keep me on track. The Triceratops.
I think so. Yeah. He's looking at you meaningfully.
But the older idea was that we have the five senses, and of course, in actuality, there are more than five senses, but the five primary senses are entering our brain, and a separate part of the brain is dealing with each. So mm-hmm. sight, hearing, smell, touch, taste. The old idea was that each part is governed by its own corresponding region of the brain. But not so, according to a 2007 Duke University Medical Center study. So they were studying monkeys, and they found that auditory and visual information is processed together before the combined signals make it into the brain's cortex, where all the analytical stuff is going on. So in other words, the sound, the ventriloquist voice,
mm-hmm.
and the image, the ventriloquist with the moving mouth and the mum-mouthed puppeteer, the audio and the visual combine before it reaches the part of the mental factory where we have to make conscious reason and thought out of it.
Yeah, certainly in instances where your brain sort of makes an assumption, right? Because you have the inferior colliculus, the tiny round structure in the brain, which is carrying visual and auditory signals, bungling mm-hmm. them all together. So if you're watching TV, as you say, you're looking at the mouth and thinking that the voice is emanating from the mouth, not the speakers.
Yeah, and it's handled in another department before it reaches the really analytical portion. In fact, according to the study, they found that about 64% of the neurons in the inferior colliculus can carry visual as well as auditory signals. So again, visual and auditory information gets combined early before the brain can process it into thought. You know, it's like the brain is where the smart guy's hanging out, but he has all these underlings that are dealing with the actual sense data. And so the sense data guy's out there, and he's like, yeah, I saw this little dummy made out of wood, and he was totally talking. What do you make of that? And you're like, oh, okay, well, what was he saying? That's what I'm going to focus on, because I trust you to tell me when there's a piece of wood talking to me.
You know, I was thinking about how ventriloquists and magicians are so similar, because mm-hmm. they're both relying on these little quick tricks to try to trick your brain, right? And I was thinking about the vanishing coin trick, where, you know, you see the coin in one hand, you see it disappear, but really what's happening is this thing called persistence of vision. The audience will actually see the coin in the left palm for a split second after the hands separate, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And visual neurons don't stop firing once you have a stimuli like that, and it's no longer present. So our perception of reality lags behind reality about one one-hundredth of a second, which is just enough for a magician to exploit.
Yeah.
So again, just same idea that the way that you're processing, you know, auditory and visual signals could be bungled up and, you know, a puppeteer could take advantage of that. Same idea, a magician and a coin trick.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to in any way support the idea, the mind body connection idea of the, of our brain as the rider on a horse. But it's kind of like the brain is in this dark box and then there's reality on the outside. And we are given, as you say, a perception of the reality. And it is the fact that we are dealing with the perception of the reality rather than the reality that allows for a lot of these tricks to take place.
Oh, don't even get me started about how reality is just a 3D computational model.
Yeah.
That we've constructed, these blueprints in our brain. We're not even really paying attention. So mm-hmm. much of what we're perceiving is an illusion anyway.
And our ability to look at a puppet and listen to a puppet and then really feel like that creature is alive, like in a way that's kind of a glitch in the system that could not have possibly, I mean, it's just, it ends up becoming an artifact of our development.
Well, and then, of course, the ventriloquist also directs your attention to the dummy, so
right.
that takes the attention away from their mouth or from seeing their vocal cords moving, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they are not, as we have learned, throwing their voice at all. They're mm-hmm. adjusting the volume. But they are again just sort of adding to this idea that it's actually the puppet talking. Your brain knows the puppet's not talking, and yet it sort of accepts that.
Yeah, and plus we're going to buy into it because we want to. I mean, if you're going to a ventriloquist or a puppet show because you don't want to believe, then you're in the wrong you're in the wrong place for your entertainment.
It's true, but even if you don't want to believe it, you end up
buying into it anyway. Yeah.
To at least the subject matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that ventriloquists do to sort of perfect the art form is to make substitutions with certain letters. Because certain letters like B, F, M, P, the plosive P, V, and W all rely on moving your lips. They're called labial sounds. So what you have to do as a ventriloquist is to then substitute other letters or sounds that don't rely on you moving your lips around.
Mm-hmm.
So something like an M, you can substitute with an N, which is more like a nah.
Uh-huh.
Makes more sense when you're the ventriloquist doing it. So if I say, hey, I'm calling Dari, Dari. I'm really using an N in there.
Right. Yeah. If I really listen closely to it, you're saying Dunny.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of Dummy.
Dari, Dunny. Right. So much creepier in person, by the way.
Well, look for the video because you
yeah.
do. We have a video on the web, Science on the Web episode coming up that explores some of this ventriloquism stuff. And you'll get to actually see clips of examples of it, and you'll get to see Julie's fabulous parlor trick that she does.
Oh, you've got a nice one too, though.
I did. Oh, yeah, yeah. yeah. Well, that one involved a little bit of additional cinematic magic, but
still,
yeah.
It's a wonderful ventriloquist voice.
Kids love it, though. Like they're at a certain age. I enjoy putting the two dots on my hand and doing the hand puppet, the senior winces type guy.
Yeah.
I tend to not have him talk, though. I just have him chew and kind of like look at the kid and then eat things, like, you know, whatever's around, actual food if possible. And then also I have him turn into a crab and crawl around on the table. That's always fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you ever have him dipping tobacco?
No, he can't really dip tobacco. He's kind yeah. of just all he can do is crawl around on the table like a crab and then ball back up into a talking fist. But kids of a certain age love it, so.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, and we are going to talk about an extreme example of this technique of letter substitution and muscle control of a mismatch between your face and your lips. It's really amazing stuff, but let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but
same old us.
Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
All right, we're back. We're talking about ventriloquism. We've spoken about the creepy side of ventriloquist dummies. Mm-hmm. The fictional creepy side, and then the arguably creepy real-life complications that occur when we breathe life into an unmoving object.
It's true, and we didn't really mention the etymology of the word ventriloquist, but it comes from the Latin words ventir, stomach, belly, or womb. That's mm-hmm. what that means, and loci, to speak. So it means to speak from the stomach. Hmm. But it's not necessarily the stomach here that is the key. It is really the ventriloquist brain, and specifically this act of bifurcation. Of course, bifurcation meaning to split. In the documentary, Kevin Johnson, a wonderful, wonderful ventriloquist, explains how you have to take command of your facial muscles. And he says that the ability to form words with your tongue and then restrain the muscles that correspond with the sound necessitates that the performer bifurcate their attention. So in other words, they're thinking really, really hard about what they're saying, but at the same time, they're trying to rein in the muscles around their mm-hmm. their mouth that naturally want to move to the rhythm of speech, of course. And then sometimes they have to do something completely contrary to what they're saying, right? They have to plaster this expression on their face that's the opposite of the emotions that are being performed, because it really is like performing yourself. Mm-hmm. Yourself and then a version of yourself at the same time.
Yeah, and you might even be drinking water. That's a favorite trick, of course.
Yeah, drinking water. He also has a beautiful opera voice. Mm-hmm. It's pretty amazing. He gives an extreme example of this by talking to the camera and purposely mismatching his mouth's movements to the words that are coming out. So it's probably one of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
It looks like the video and the audio have become out of sync, but he's creating the effect just completely organically by moving his lips at one speed and then speaking at another. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's like there's a 5-second delay on it.
Right.
And he did say to Nina Conti, like, I can't look at you while I'm doing this because it takes so much concentration mm-hmm. to try to pull this trick off on myself.
Yeah.
Essentially. But another expert that she interviewed that I thought gave a great example of how puppeteers are creating this illusion is Nacho Estrada.
Mm-hmm.
Best name ever, by the way. He's a distant voice expert. And he was showing Nina Conti how throwing your voice is really just a matter, again, of misdirection and then controlling that volume of the voice as well as the direction. So you can sort of speak in a direction to trick the ear. But I wanted to play this clip for you guys out there because although you can't see it, you can hear the differences of when he's, quote-unquote, throwing his voice. So let's check it out as he describes someone being, I believe they are stuck in a cup, a teacup.
They say throw your voice, but I'm fooling your hearing. So I can do something like, I throw my voice in here, but I'm not really throwing it. It's a misdirection. So I said, hello, see?
Hello.
See? So it's things like... There's nothing in there, but I'm just fooling. I'm using this to show you different. You're directing your attention here.
Yeah, I love that bit. It's just you kind of have to see the video to get the full effect because he's doing the whole thing where he's putting it into the cup and then he's covering the cup up, and it's just kind of this kind of juggling of this sound and I feel like his hand movements are important as well
mm-hmm.
because he's in the same way that a magician says, the coin is here because that's how I am moving my hand.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing the same thing with this voice that he has taken out like it's a physical object and put it into another object.
And what I like about this is I feel like he has elevated the art form of ventriloquism to such a height that he really is able to manipulate the voice so well that it does really appear like, hey, that voice is stuck in his cup, which is not even a cup, but his hand representing a cup.
And it's such a well done, like throwing your voice when it's actually done by someone who knows how to do it. It's such a convincing act that everyone's interpretation of the act is completely wrong. Basically, when you encounter people throwing their voice in cartoons or comedy shows or even in movies such as When a Stranger Calls Back, a horrible 1993 psychological thriller
mm-hmm.
in which the killer perpetrates his crimes by sneaking into people's homes, like I guess early in the morning or something, then stripping down and painting himself so that he resembles a complex brick wall or something. Like it's never as simple as I look like the white wall now and I'm standing against a white wall. It's always something really elaborate that there's no possible way he could have painted himself to look like that. So then he'll stand there unseen and throw his voice around so that it sounds like he's elsewhere in the room. But of course this is just completely stupid because part of the whole idea is that you need to see the person who's throwing the voice. Like, that's an essential part of the act.
They have to direct it somewhere. Yeah. So, in reality...
It's not just, I can make it seem like the corner is talking, and you don't... Yeah. It's just...
In reality, you'd be like, why is the dude who's painted up sitting there talking to me?
Right, right. But
is this a dream?
I feel like it's all because the act is so convincing, and the magic of it is literally less understood than other forms of puppetry and voice manipulation that we... Even though we know it's a trick, we still don't really understand what's happening.
Well, and one of the things about the tricks that are pulled off is that it takes a ton of practice,
mm-hmm.
Years and years of this to get really good at it. And of course, that means that this inanimate object that you work with, you really do begin to deepen that relationship because it is sort of a therapeutic aspect, right? I mean,
right.
You continue to talk to this puppet. You say things to yourself that you normally wouldn't say, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a fairly deep relationship with it. At least this seems to be the case with what Nina Conti presented when she interviewed the ventriloquist. And so puppet and master are pretty wound together. So what happens when a ventriloquist passes away? Well, that is a bereaved puppet, and it has to find a home.
Yes.
And it does. in the form of the Vent Haven Museum. Okay. Which will take bereaved puppets.
Which is in Kentucky.
In Fort Mitchell, Kentucky, it is the world's only public collection of materials related to ventriloquism. There are 700 ventriloquist dummies arranged in three buildings, some sitting in rows as if waiting for a class to begin.
Yeah.
That's a place that I want to be in by myself. I want to spend hours in that room by myself. there's some really unusual creations, including a head carved by a German prisoner in the Soviet POW camp from World War II. The vent performed for fellow prisoners as well is for the cook to get extra food. So there's a lot of history that goes into this museum. It's not just, mm-hmm. you know, that the puppets are sitting there gathering dust. But more importantly, Vent Haven actually hosts a convention every year where 450 ventriloquists converge on Fort Mitchell's restaurant scene.
You're really talking 900 at least participants, though.
That's true. Yeah. That was insensitive of me. I just keep thinking about the town, like, you know, all the restaurants are probably like, oh boy, pretty soon the restaurants are going to be filled up with people sitting at their table talking to their puppets.
Yeah. Because I understand that this convention, like other puppetry conventions, you have people there with their puppet. And they're communicating with their puppet. They're communicating with other people via their puppet.
Mm-hmm.
The link between puppet puppeteer and puppet becomes such that it's just part of communication. At least when you're in group.
Well, you probably won't be surprised to find out that most people who practice ventriloquism are introverts mm-hmm. and speak through their puppets. So, without the puppet, I think it's a lot harder to communicate. So
right.
it's odd because you have false extroverts milling around in the crowd. Or maybe not false at that moment. All right, so I think we've covered it pretty well, but Robert, I wanted to know from you.
Yes.
If you were forced to get a ventriloquist dummy, what would yours be?
Oh, well, Well, I would not want to go with the, you know, traditional ventriloquist dummy. That's for sure. I would want, you know, something.
Yeah. The bow tie one.
Yeah.
That's the one I always think of as the more traditional one with the dark hair.
I don't know. Does anyone have a mummy ventriloquist dummy?
Oh.
A ventriloquist mummy, as it were? That would be a lot of fun.
Oh, there's so many mummy mommy jokes there.
I'm not sure what I would, oh, I know what I would do. Okay, so this would be the whole get up. The idea is that a Victorian explorer happened to, during the tomb plundering mm-hmm. period of colonialism, he discovers this tomb and breaks open the sarcophagus, but then the mummy overpowers him, switches places with him,
mm-hmm.
and then locks him in. So then the actual mummy runs off and, you know, and is still alive, enjoying a wonderful life in England, while the Victorian gentleman is trapped in the sarcophagus for another 100 years. And so my puppet would be essentially a British Victorian mummy who would talk. So he'd be talking in a nice British accent, but he would be a mummy. That's my thing.
First of all, I really want you to do this. Second of all, did you just think of that off the top of your head?
Yes, but largely it came to be because I was thinking, a mummy ventriloquist puppet would be great, but I don't know what an ancient Egyptian accent would consist of, but I love British accents, so that's what I would do.
You've got it all figured out.
Yeah.
You've got to do this. You know this, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing, you know, I don't think we mentioned this, but comic timing is incredibly important to this, to ventriloquism, because you can be a master at the voices.
You still need to make people laugh.
Yeah, because otherwise it's just sort of like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, you got to know your audience. You got to tailor your act to your audience. Well, how about you? Let's say you had your dream ventriloquist dummy. What would your act be?
I don't know. I mean, an animal comes to mind. And I think just a foul-mouthed one, I'm going to have to say. I mean, I don't think that comes as a surprise. Probably one that's interested in scatology.
Yeah.
This is not an act I think anybody wants to see.
Huh. Maybe you'll go with some sort of extreme prehistoric mammal, which is going to be the
Ooh.
Topic of a couple of upcoming episodes. Maybe there's something in there.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Perhaps a woolly mammoth.
Cool. All right. Well, there you have it. Ventriloquist dummies explained. Hopefully, everyone has a little more respect for the art form and a little more of an understanding about what's going on when you're watching a puppeteer use a puppet and buying into the act. What's happening when somebody's actually throwing their voice?
How we're all brain rubes, really.
Yeah, essentially. And, you know, the puppetry is awesome, but it is kind of a glitch in our perceptions of reality. So if you have something you would like to share about this, I'm sure we have some puppeteers out there who are listening to the show. If you are a puppeteer, if you are a ventriloquist, if you can throw your voice, any of these things, or if you just really appreciate the art form or are terrified of the art form, really, whatever your thoughts are, we'd love to hear about them. You can find us online, as always, at the mothership, stufftoblowyourmind.com. But you can also find us on Facebook and Tumblr. We are Stuff to Blow Your Mind on both of those. You can find us on Twitter, where our handle is Blow the Mind. And on YouTube, we are Mind Stuff Show.
And you can always drop us a line at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.